Aristotle, the first man to organise scientific knowledge.
If you ask people to mention the names of three great philosophers, my name will come up along with those of Socrates and Plato. People also remember me because Alexander the Great was my most famous student. I was born in 384 BCE in Macedonia, in the north of Greece, in a town called Stigira, which was a busy port. Nowadays, many tourists want to see the place that is famous because it was my birthplace. There isn't much left of the old town, just ruins, but people enjoy seeing part of the wall that surrounded the town, some of the old houses in it, and the marketplace, the Agora. This was the most important part of the town, because it was here that people went to do business, talk politics, and, of course, socialise. I was lucky enough to have parents who taught me many things, but you could also say that I was rather unlucky too, because they both died when I was just a boy. And my father, whose name was Nicomachus, was a doctor, but he wasn't an ordinary doctor. He was the personal physician to King Amyntas of Macedonia. It was my father who made me interested in learning about medicine. Naturally, we didn't really know very much about how the human body worked, nor did we know exactly what caused people to become ill. When they were sick, we tried to cure their illnesses with herbs and prayers. What we did understand, however, was that keeping fit by taking regular exercise was extremely important. We saw that those who were fit got ill less often than those who never exercised at all. Medicine wasn't the only subject I was interested in. By nature, I was a curious child, and from an early age, I listened with great interest to the family discussions that often took place at home. These debates, because they were more than just discussions, were about the political situation in our town. They focused on the activities of all the influential people who lived there. I don't know whether or not it was my father's wish for me to become a politician. Unfortunately, he died long before I knew myself what I wanted to do with my life. When my father died, leaving me an orphan, my older sister Arimneste and her husband Proxenus took me in and looked after me. My father had been a wealthy man, and there was plenty of money available for my education. In addition to my existing interest in politics and medicine, what I was really fascinated by was philosophy and science. Not only did I want to continue my studies in these subjects, but I also wanted to study in the city that was the most important academic place on the planet. So, in 366 BCE, at the age of 18, I packed up and moved to Athens. Athens was a completely new world for me. My first impression was of all these city people rushing noisily through the streets trying to make their fortune. They were so busy in their attempts to make money that very few of them actually had the time to discover new things and explore the world around them. This, however, was exactly what I intended to do with my time. Having come from an aristocratic family, I had enough money to follow my dream and to live comfortably. In Athens, I joined Plato's Academy. Plato was a great thinker and teacher, and I learned a great deal from him. For the next 20 years, until his death, I worked at the Academy. It was the perfect chance to research and teach, and I focused on the science of living, which included politics, physics, logic, biology, and psychology. In one sense, original thought was easier in my time because there was so much that we didn't know. We could research a subject, and with the results, we could expand and develop what we already knew about it. When Plato died in 347 BCE, Many people believed that I would become the new director of the Academy, but I was not offered the position. Before his death, Plato had requested that it would be his nephew, not I, who would inherit the position. During our time together, Plato and I had had many academic differences, and it was inevitable that we would disagree sometimes. Perhaps his decision was based on these differences, perhaps not. But anyway, I decided instead to travel. Travelling was hard work and took a long time on dangerous, rough roads. I walked or rode on horses or camels, whatever the weather. In the summer, it was hot and dusty. In the winter, I froze in the snow, ice and fierce winds. In autumn and spring, I got very wet when it rained. Of course, every season had its spectacular moments, but there was no doubt that however rich you were, travelling was uncomfortable. When I finally reached Assos in Asia Minor, I visited an ex-student of mine, Hermias, who had once been a slave. As well as gaining his freedom, he had managed, surprisingly, to become king of Ateneus. I stayed with Hermias' family for 3 years and met his niece, Pythias. We fell in love and got married. I was already a happy man, but one of the best days of my life was when little Pythias, our daughter, was born. In 343 BCE, King Philip II, whose son would become Alexander the Great, invited me back to Macedonia to educate the 13-year-old boy, and there I became the head of the Royal Academy. I taught Alexander and a few of his friends philosophy, poetry, drama, science, and politics. Alexander dreamed of being a hero on the battlefields, and when he was 16, he took part in his first battle. 2 years after that, he helped his father to defeat armies from both Athens and Thebes. King Philip II was head of the Corinthian League, and he managed to get all the Greek city-states, with the exception of Sparta, to agree to belong to it. When Philip died in 336 BCE, Alexander became king of Macedonia. But being king did not give him the right to be the leader of the league. Athens was being ruled by Demosthenes, whose aim was to control the league himself. Alexander sent his army south and persuaded the members of the league to accept him as their leader. In 334 BCE, while Alexander was fighting for control of Asia, I decided to return to the city with my family. I still wanted to teach, and I was given permission to open my own school at the edge of the city, which we called the Lyceum. I gathered together a group of research students who became known as the Peripatetics. Their name was based on the Greek for walking, because of their habit of wandering around the school while they were thinking and discussing different topics. I wanted education to be available for everyone, and so many of our lectures were open to the public and were free of charge. It was in this school of mine that my type of thinking was given a name: Aristotelian logic, the key aspect of which was clarity of thought. And here I wrote, among many others, two of my better-known books, De Anima and Parva Naturalia. Academic life wasn't easy. We worked by the light of candles, which was hard on the eyes, and it was often cold. It wasn't only at the Lyceum where conditions were difficult. Poverty and disease surrounded us, and, tragically, because we did not have enough knowledge of medicine to save her, my poor wife died in 335 BCE at a very young age. I was sure that we wouldn't have lost her if our level of education had been higher and we'd been able to carry out proper scientific research. Education, in my view, consisted of three parts, and to be thorough and correct, had to include all three: the practical, the poetical, and the theoretical. The practical covered politics and ethics in government and business. The poetical was concerned with the arts and humanities, while the theoretical was all about mathematics and metaphysics. The scientific method that I was in favour of provided a link between the three areas, but I was convinced that evidence, rather than just opinion, had to be the basis for assessment. The problem with evidence, however, was that it was proving hard to find for many of my theories. Before I returned to Athens and set up the Lyceum, I had gone to the island of Lesbos for a while, in the hope of finding such evidence. I wanted to study natural life in its natural form. In the sea, marine life provided new understanding, and I was completely fascinated by botany, the study of plants. I knew that plants had secrets that could bring help to those who were ill. I had learned that much from my father. But I was sure that there was still so much more to be discovered. In the field of agriculture, too, we had to find better ways of growing crops so that we could become more efficient at feeding ourselves. In contrast, I believe that because the study of ethics is a personal subject, the best way to learn about it was through life experience. By life experience, I mean learning by thinking about the decisions we make and the things that we do. This means studying our thoughts as they are acted out. Politics, however, is a public matter. People in general use politics to survive. It is all about using your skills to negotiate who gets what, when, and how. Depending on how good you are at politics, the results will either be positive, with peace and prosperity all around you, or negative, leading to a state of conflict and revolution. Philosophy became a key area of my thought and teaching, as I tried to find a way to integrate logic, feelings, and evidence. Later, much of my approach was adopted and turned into what was called scholasticism, and some of my ideas were kept alive. In a world where time destroys almost everything, my life's work has survived. Not only has it survived, it is now better known than it was when I was alive, although it did disappear for a while. In about 1500 CE, after hundreds of years in a world where science was forgotten, my work suddenly came to life again as universities began to teach Greek. My work became visible and important once more. However, much of what I suggested then was guesswork. My claim that the Earth was the centre of the universe took more than 2,000 years to be proved. Theory is fine, but scientific evidence is hard to establish because it requires clear thinking and the strength not to give up. Theories are ideas that mark the way for change and development. To get evidence, experiments need to be made and we need to learn from our actions. We need more people to face the challenge of the unknown. People who will advance understanding despite the ignorance of others. Innovation takes time to succeed, and it seems to be a fact that having evidence by itself is not enough. It is also necessary to have a quick mind and make good judgments. You need to be able to publicise your ideas and have the confidence to tell the whole world about them and make people believe in you. Only in this way can people move forward. In 323 BCE, Alexander the Great died and the Macedonian government lost power. In Athens, there were considerable anti-Macedonian feelings, and I felt that my life was in danger. I made the decision to leave the city and to go to the island of Euboea. A year later, I died there of natural causes.